Ye come here, gather round the stage. The time has come for us to voice our rage against the ones who've trapped us in a cage to steal from us the value of our wage. From underneath the vestiture of law, the lobbyists at Washington do gnaw at liberty, the bureaucrats guffaw. And until they are purged, we won't withdraw. We'll occupy the streets, we'll occupy the courts, we'll occupy the offices of you till you do the bidding of the many, not the few. Our nation was built upon the right of every person to improve their plight. The laws of this republic they rewrite, and now a few own everything in sight. They own it free of liability. They own that they are not like you and me. Their influence dictates legality. And until they are stopped, we are not free. We'll occupy the streets, we'll occupy the courts, we'll occupy the offices of you till you do the bidding of the many, not the few. You enforce your monopolies with guns while sacrificing our daughters and sons. But certain things belong to everyone. Your thievery has left the people none. So take heed of our notice to redress. We have little to lose, we must confess. Your empty words do leave us unimpressed. A growing number join us in protest. We occupy the streets, we occupy the courts, we occupy the offices of you till you do the bidding of the many, not the few. You can't divide us into sides, and from our gaze you cannot hide. Denial serves to amplify, and our allegiance you can't buy. Our government is not for sale. The banks do not deserve a bail. We will not reward those who fail. We'll not move till we prevail. We'll occupy the streets, we'll occupy the courts, we'll occupy the offices of you till you do the bidding of the many, not the few. We'll occupy the streets, we'll occupy the courts, we'll occupy the offices of you till you do the bidding of the many, not the few. We are the many, you are the few.
Thank you. thanks for returning to Great Speeches and Interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. Today's program features Robert Polin talking about his book, Back to Full Employment.
Robert Polin argues that the U.S. government should be pushing for less than 4% unemployment, also known as full employment, a policy goal that he says was abandoned in the 1970s when concerns about inflation began to take precedence.
Thank you, Joan. Happy to introduce Bob tonight. Bob Polin is one of the leading heterodox economists in the United States. Heterodox economists are the best kind, the ones that think outside the narrow box of orthodox economics. Bob is a professor of economics at the University of Massachusetts and a co-director and co-founder of the Political Economy Research Institute at UMass, a very important research institute that does excellent academic scholarship with a public purpose. Bob's books include a number of books, Contours of Dissent. That's Descent of the U.S. Economy in 2003. Two books on the living wage, a 1998 book, The Living Wage, Building a Fair Economy, and then more recently, A Measure of Fairness, The Economics of the Living Wage and Minimum Wages. And his most recent book is the topic for tonight, Back to Full Employment. I just want to add that Bob's work on the living wage has been very, very important. He's been probably the leading researcher on this important issue. He's published numerous papers and reports in addition to these two books. He's traveled to cities across the country to speak about the living wage and has testified before many city councils who were considering living wage proposals. And I think this is a really important contribution, and I just want to acknowledge that. Bob's recent work is focused on the green economy and the achievement of the twin goals of sustainable energy and full employment. He's written a number of papers and reports on this topic, has worked as a consultant on green energy projects for the U.S. Department of Energy and the International Labor Organization, and is currently directing a green energy project for the U.N. Industrial Development Organization. So Bob's talk tonight, as we've said, will be based on his latest book, Back to Full Employment. And I just want to add a little context here, and that is that the unemployment problem in the U.S. is very serious, and it's more serious than it appears from the official government statistics. The main reason why the official rate of unemployment has declined somewhat in recent years is that the official estimates of the labor force have hardly increased at all since 2008. It's as if population growth has just stopped. But what's happening is that jobs are so scarce that millions of unemployed workers have given up looking for a job, and they are not counted in the official government statistics. And if we just, as an exercise, assume that the labor force over the last several years has grown at a normal rate, then the rate of unemployment would be at least 3 or 4 percentage points higher than the official 7.9, more like 11%, 12%, clearly in double digits, and that's serious. And I think that the unemployment rate is going to remain double digits for the foreseeable future unless the government provides some major job-creating initiatives. And Bob's going to tell us tonight how that can be done. So join me in welcoming Bob.
You can listen to Great Speeches and Interviews on accesssacramento.org, or you can go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
We got to have peace to keep the world alive and want to see. Hear us through our voice. The world knows there's no choice.
Well, thank you very much, Fred. Thank you very much, Joan. I'm very happy to be here. And so I guess the plan is I'm just warm up and we'll talk about what's in this tiny, tiny, tiny little book a little bit, give some overview, and then we can have a discussion. So, well, as Fred said, Fred took all my good lines there. But, the magnitude of the unemployment situation today is really unprecedented since the 1930s. And it is not, as Fred said, fully reflected in the data, at least the data that gets into the headlines. So as Fred said, what we aren't measuring when we say 7.9% are the number of people that are not trying to get jobs immediately because they become discouraged. And it also is not including people who wanted full-time jobs but only got very, very part-time jobs. Now, the Labor Department does count these people. They're just kind of buried in the statistical stacks. And if you take just those two groups, the people that wanted full-time but maybe only got 2 hours a week, they wanted 40 hours, they've got 5 hours or 10 hours, and the people, as Fred said, who were discouraged, the unemployment rate today, officially, this is not something I've made up, is 14.4%. Not 7.9 is bad enough, but 14.4. Now, 14.4% is 23 million people. Now, just to try to ground that a little bit, if we think about the population of the 10 biggest cities in the country, starting with New York, L.A., Chicago, Houston, San Diego, it's in the book here, but San Jose is 10th. Oh, Dallas. Anyway, take the 10 biggest cities, add up their entire populations of all 10, imagine all the people in all of those cities, that's 23 million people. So that's how severe the unemployment crisis is. And again, there is no precedent since we got out of the Great Depression. Another statistic. We had this thing that we now call the Great Recession that followed the Wall Street crash that was caused by excessive speculation on Wall Street. Now, according to the official arbiters of when recessions end, the recession started in the last 3 months of 2007, and it officially ended by June of 2009. That's 3.5 years ago. We've been out of a recession for 3.5 years, officially. Now, one thing I recently calculated is let's look at this recession relative to all the other recessions that have taken place since the Great Depression. Now, in all the other recessions, you know, they're different experiences, but the economy does bounce back. You have when you say the recession ends, it actually really ends. You can see that in the statistics. And on average, the unemployment rate for the other recessions, sometimes it was severe, but the unemployment rate in the other recessions, average 3 years out, is 6.3%. And in this recession, the average 3 years for the 3 years after the recession ended is 9.2%. So for the 3 years, I'm not talking about the recession itself. I'm talking about after the recession ended, it was 9.2% as opposed to the previous experiences, including, 1980-82 was very severe, but then we came out of it. 6.3%. Now, the difference, if we actually had a 6.3% unemployment rate today instead of the average of 9.2, officially that's 4.5 million people that would have jobs now that don't. So we have this very severe problem by any measure. Everybody knows it. The presidential race, I mean, Romney was talking about it. There is, of course, the question of what you do about it. So I will mention a few things about what we can do about it. But first, let me just make a couple of points. The first is why this is a very, very simple basic point. Why do we care so much about unemployment? I mean, I think everybody knows the answer, but it's worth saying it anyway. People need jobs. most people are not independently wealthy, and that therefore they need jobs. Either they themselves or a member of their family who supports other people in the family need to have jobs. So jobs are basic in terms of money. Jobs are also basic in terms of people's stability, the stability of the family, stability of the community, sense of self-worth, being integrated in a community life. If you don't have a job, you spend all of your time worrying about the fact that you don't have a job. And it makes it much more difficult for you and other members of your family to function in any kind of normal way. So jobs are intrinsic to well-being. They're intrinsic to, money, material well-being, but they're also intrinsic to psychological well-being, to participation in the community, to family stability. So when you have mass unemployment, it eats away and really destroys the basic fabric of society. And that's what we've experienced over the since basically 2008, when this Great Recession started. So I will get to some ideas on what to do, but I want to mention one other thing, which is that the idea about fighting for full employment is hardly original to me. I don't want to claim any originality at all. And in fact, it was a pretty commonplace, mainstream, orthodox idea for about 30 years. Coming out of the Great Depression in the 1930s, the idea was that basically, the capitalist economies coming out of the 1930s knew that they could not survive another Great Depression, that the legitimacy of the system would be destroyed if you couldn't provide something akin to decent employment opportunities for the people in the society. So full employment became the centerpiece of economic policy coming out of the 1930s and remained that as the central organizing idea. Now, governments came and went, and some of them were more or less committed, of course. But the idea of providing decent jobs was really the whole edifice of mainstream macroeconomic policy was organized around this idea. How can a society get to full employment, and once you're there, stay there? Now, there were a lot of debates as to whether this is viable, whether it is desirable. And over time, the idea emerged that, really, what the government should do is worry about inflation, that that's the more serious problem. And unemployment will take care of itself. And this is what some of us call neoliberalism. The idea that, if people don't have jobs, then go out and bargain for yourself with a potential employer. If they don't want to hire you, lower your wage, and eventually somebody's going to hire you for the value that you're worth to them. And that's how you achieve full employment, that it's derived entirely through what will happen through bargaining in the market. And that idea has prevailed. That idea overtook the notion that society should build a full employment economy, that government policy should care about this. What we've had, if you want to set a date, really since the beginning of the Reagan administration in 1981, but even in the late 1970s, you have the really decline of the idea that government policy should be focused around achieving full employment, and the emergence of the idea that the market knows best. If the government tries to do something, they're going to just mess it up. So the government should worry about keeping inflation down and let the market decide everything else. And then, along with that was the idea that the market decide how financial operations take place and deregulate the financial markets. That's what led to the speculative bubble and crash, which in turn created the Great Recession. So that's kind of the background to what my book goes through, some of that background. Very briefly, again, very short book, so I try to compress things a lot. But that's the basic background. Now,
President Jimmy Carter speaks to the nation on a growing energy crisis in 1979.
What I have to say to you now about energy is simple and vitally important. Point one, I am tonight setting a clear goal for the energy policy of the United States. Beginning this moment, this nation will never use more foreign oil than we did in 1977. Never. From now on, every new addition to our demand for energy will be met from our own production and our own conservation. The generation-long growth in our dependence on foreign oil will be stopped dead in its tracks right now, and then reversed as we move through the 1980s. For I am tonight setting the further goal of cutting our dependence on foreign oil by one half by the end of the next decade, a saving of over 4.5 million barrels of imported oil per day. Point two, to ensure that we meet these targets, I will use my presidential authority to set import quotas. I'm announcing tonight that for 1979 and 1980, I will forbid the entry into this country of one drop of foreign oil more than these goals allow. These quotas will ensure a reduction in imports even below the ambitious levels we set at the recent Tokyo summit. I ask Congress to give me authority for mandatory conservation and for standby gasoline rationing. To further conserve energy, I'm proposing tonight an extra $10 billion over the next decade to strengthen our public transportation systems. And I'm asking you for your good and for your nation's security to take no unnecessary trips, to use carpools or public transportation whenever you can, to park your car one extra day per week, to obey the speed limit, and to set your thermostats to save fuel. Every act of energy conservation like this is more than just common sense. I tell you, it is an act of patriotism. Our nation must be fair to the poorest among us. So we will increase aid to needy Americans to cope with rising energy prices. We often think of conservation only in terms of sacrifice. In fact, it is a most painless and immediate way of rebuilding our nation's strength. Every gallon of oil each one of us saves is a new form of production. It gives us more freedom, more confidence, that much more control over our own lives. So the solution of our energy crisis can also help us to conquer the crisis of the spirit in our country. It can rekindle our sense of unity, our confidence in the future, and give our nation and all of us individually a new sense of purpose. I have seen the strength of America in the inexhaustible resources of our people. In the days to come, let us renew that strength in the struggle for an energy-secure nation. In closing, let me say this. I will do my best, but I will not do it alone. Let your voice be heard. Whenever you have a chance, say something good about our country. With God's help, and for the sake of our nation, it is time for us to join hands in America. Let us commit ourselves together to a rebirth of the American spirit. Working together with our common faith, we cannot fail. Thank you, and good night.
And now for something completely different.